Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rainer's Radio, practical training for joint heirs with Christ, with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good evening, and welcome to Rainer's Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. And we've been really setting the stage for looking at specifically what are some things that we can do to know God on His terms. We've been looking at our enemies and how to overcome them and how to know God in general. But what we really want to look at when we're talking about our purpose and our success here on this earth, it's really a matter of cooperating with God with what He wants to do. And how do we do that? Practically, how do we do that? If God is responsible for changing us, and He is, what is it that we're supposed to be doing? And most of us get hung up here. It's part of, I think, being human, part of the world system we live in, to sustain us, to sustain our physical being. We try to maintain control. We look at, these are the things I need to sustain my life. How do I get them? Whether it's from love from another person or money to pay the mortgage. It's, this is what I need or want. How do I get them? And that very often translates into our relationship with God. But His ways are not our ways. In fact, they're 180 degrees out of phase. Instead, what we're looking at in relationship with Him is a stillness, rather than an attempt to gain control or even some kind of ability to get our needs met. I'm reminded of King David when he committed a sin against God by numbering the number of people in his army, by counting them. Well, what's the big deal? Why is that a problem? Because they weren't his. They weren't his army. And simply by numbering them, he was, in his own mind, in his own heart, trying to gain control over a gift, a blessing that God had given him. Certainly doesn't mean he wasn't responsible. When they went out to war, he was responsible for making sure they had everything they needed. They need to be paid. They need to be taken care of. Their families needed to be taken care of. This is a great example of the distinction between what is ours and what is God's in this kind of a setting. As soon as he numbered them, he said, these are how many I have in my army. That's what he was doing with that. And it's, he was looking for comfort and confidence and courage out of that number. I wonder if that number had been too small, would he have started to draft or recruit? Or if it was too big, would he have started to go to war because he had the power to do so? When God wanted him simply to trust that when there was a need, God would bring the army that he needed, the number. Again, David's responsible as the king for taking care of them, managing them well and being a good leader. And there are sometimes things in our own lives where he said, I'll take care of that. But we try to help. And we do that because we are so used to having that responsibility fall on our shoulders. Or the opposite. We're so used to somebody else taking that responsibility that we don't look into a situation and say, okay, what part of this is my responsibility? And there are practical matters, relational matters, maturity levels, but it comes down to, doesn't it always? Lord, in this situation, am I missing something? This is an area a lot of parents and even grandparents get into a real challenge with seeing their kids do things wrong and get into trouble. They feel like, okay, well, they're for instance, married and they have kids of their own. If I start saying anything, I'll be butting in. So they don't even ask. They don't even offer. They assume their advice is not wanted before checking, when it may be that that son or daughter is just longing for some good guidance. Now, of course, you have to have the good guidance, but very often these things are simple to address from a long distance, from a longer distance perspective than being right in a situation. But we decide, okay, I'm not going to get involved in that situation because of this. So we don't even pay any attention to it at all. It's none of my business. Well, part of it may be. From a practical standpoint, in a family, communication is built on love and respect and trust is all built on asking questions. When we make assumptions about one another, we are saying, I already know what you think. I already know what you feel. And that's just plain arrogance. Now, if you've been told, Mom, quit butting out, or Dad, we've talked about this before, I know where you're coming from, that's fine. Then you can just say, okay, well, if you ever do want to talk about this, I'm here for you. So often, we make assumptions, or there may even be, I don't want your opinion, but don't rule out you being the conduit that God speaks or does or moves in someone else's life, even your family. Why does he have you, why does he have that person in your proximity for the rest of your life anyway, if it's not to have an effect on them? You know, this is one of the problems I think we might have with families in ministry, is a lot of times the second generation, the last thing they want to do is say a family, you know, parents, Mom and Dad is in the ministry, they want to do for the next generation, their kids, is be involved in ministry. I think that says something. I think something was not relayed. I think that something is the love of God. if someone is modeling by experience, is living out the love of God, not just the love of God, but loving God, showing them how to do it, where his presence, where the presence of God is a habitation, is a dwelling place, where God lives there. It would seem like there would be such a drawing that any child, regardless of any resentments there might be, would be filled with a desire for that love as well. So I think that's a starting point, is think about God putting the people in your family for a reason, not just to give you trials, even though that might be part of it, but it might be so you can learn how to have an impact on someone. It's so funny, so many of us would much rather minister to strangers than our relatives. Maybe it's because they know how often we've screwed up. And if that's the case, you need to deal with that by taking it to the Lord. Lord, if I bring this up to them, if they're struggling with in this situation, maybe they have a child with anger issues or something, they're going to bring up to me how terrible I was at parenting. What am I going to say? And let the Lord give you what to say. He may drop a phrase or a thought or an occurrence, an event that happened. He may bring a friend to give you an example, or he may lead you on to a book or a conference or an article on the internet. Who knows? But let him speak to you. Likewise, he may say, it's none of your business. Want to engage in the situation we're in. We don't want to discount the people that God has placed immediately in our lives. That might be your mission field. That may be, and because they're so close to us, we go, okay, well, if I screw up, I'm going to have to live with it. Or if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to have to live with it. Then what are we dealing with? We're just so concerned about our flesh being exposed, whether it's pride or fear, that we're letting God speak to us about everything but our family. And again, it's always letting God speak to us. It's never we take it on as, okay, this is my mission field to fix my family's problems. Because that's not true either. But hopefully, with the people that God has placed in our lives, there's unique things that they bring out of us and speak into us that God meant to happen, and opportunities that he has created that could not happen any other way. Thinking about the 12 disciples that traveled with Jesus, they didn't just meet on Sundays and Wednesday nights. They lived together. And we know they bickered. And we know there were jealousies and questions and challenges. They were normal. They were people. And Jesus knew their heart. And he didn't blame them. He challenged them, but he didn't say, okay, you screwed up. You're no longer one of my disciples. So, what can we do? Even when we don't know what God has for us tomorrow, we can ask him today, what is it that's on your mind? Is there something you want to say today? And he will have you ready for tomorrow. So hopefully that was encouraging to somebody, but we're talking about being successful and productive Christians. What does that mean? If God is the only one who changes us, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? Well, yes and no, of course. We can learn to actively rest. Now, a lot of people, this is kind of confusing, actively rest part. A lot of times when we think of rest, we think of, okay, laying out in a hammock and falling asleep. Well, in that scenario, you're just allowing your mind to do whatever it wants, your will to do whatever it wants, your body to do whatever it wants, and your emotions to do whatever they want. But when we actively rest, the goal is to have an awareness of God, whether we feel or sense or can acknowledge or hear from him. So the active part of resting is, as he makes clear, bringing our mind, our thoughts, from running back where they want, bringing our emotions back to us, bringing our will and our body back into the now. Being aware that he is present, whether we sense him or not, but that we are in his presence and he is in ours. And just by being in his presence quietly, he is changing us. So that activity is, as he increases your awareness, you learn to actively bring the aspects of your soul back into his presence. What is our final goal? To become one in him, spirit, soul, and body, where our soul and our body line up with spirit. When that happens, we will be at perfect rest, spirit, soul, and body. Perfect rest, and yet perfectly active. Think about Jesus. He was always at perfect rest. And yet he was very active. He was engaged. He was doing his Father's business. We can, on a personal note, when we think of healing and how does healing involve that actively resting? When a hospital patient is having surgery, it's imperative that they lie still on the operating table. So during surgery, bodies are anesthetized to keep them reacting to the actual surgery, the pain, the trauma. But you and I, we are fully aware of everything that is going on around us. When we're at that, in that rest, in his presence, we can be fully aware. We can be doing calculus. We can be engaged in conversation and yet still be fully aware of his presence and resting, actively resting in his presence. This is something you have to experience in order to fully understand. But this is the common way of living in the spirit, this is being a spirit, having a soul, and living in this world, in your body. Now, to get to that state of rest, God will teach us how to truly repent, which is turn from the strength of our soul, renew our minds, and submit our beliefs. Until we believe what he says about us. Now, through that process, we not only learn about ourselves, but we learn about him. We learn what he thinks about us. We will learn how much he's invested in us. We will learn how much he loves us. And it's through the process of healing and teaching and trial and error that we to him. Because we have experienced his love for us. Only God, as spirit, can live the Christian life. Your soul can't. Our purpose now is to let him live that life through us without our interference. God's life, spirit life in us, becomes our reality, more real than what your physical senses are perceiving, or even your supernatural, your soulical senses are perceiving. So we become blind to our surroundings and our own desires, and even deaf to the cries of the needs within and the needy without, to the point that all we know is what he tells us, and only respond to his will joyfully and with his power and authority. And going back to the family, perhaps this is one of the reasons God does have a hard time using us in our immediate families, is because we think we already know what the problem is and we already know what the solution is. We interject our own beliefs and our own solutions. But this is the perfect opportunity to learn that separation, draw from our beliefs and what we know, our history, and see them as beloved of God, who, even though they don't know it, need him. They need healing. They need life, eternal life. We're not talking about the need for heaven or, but a source of real life. They have never had their needs satisfied. And very often, well, they're not open, so I'm not going to go there. For you to decide. And one of the little caveats I always have about going to God about a situation is, do you care what the answer is? When we are asking God for something, or about something, or someone, if we care what he says, if we care what the answer is, yes, you can do this, no, you can't, then there might be something he wants to talk to you about that is keeping you from receiving him unconditionally. There may be a wound, an expectation, even a character issue, a strength in your temperament that you've been relying on instead of relying on the presence of God. But he knows what you need and he knows what they need. This is meant to be an adventure. I think we rob ourselves of a lot of enjoyment by trying to do things our own way and denying God his sovereignty in our lives and in the lives of others. So again, this will require turning a deaf ear and shutting our eyes to what we have learned about God and how we fit into what he's doing. What God says to us and about us is the truth. Not necessarily what we've learned from our pastor, parents, or even what our own mind tells us, especially if it's something like, I'm a failure, or I'm too old, or I've made too many mistakes, or I'll never be accepted, or the opposite. I don't need to do that. I don't need God. But our thinking, feeling, and choosing all need to be reconciled, brought into that alignment with the truth, spirit, what God says is true. Now, this is not just hearing God loves you. This is hearing it from him. And if you haven't, if you've never heard God tell you that he loves you, and if that's not real, I challenge you to challenge him. Lord, I need to know for sure that you love me. I believe you do, but I don't know. I trust that you will make yourself known whatever way you choose, but this is something I'd really like to be able to have that confidence that you love me. And see what he does. Just because you believe something is true doesn't make it true. Just because you've heard something from a reliable source doesn't mean it's reliable. Test it. How do you do that? Again, Lord, is this true? Is this from you? This is such a failure that has been taught in, or not taught in the church, so long in established religion. You test what you've been taught by what else you've been taught, by what's in the Bible and people, certain person's interpretation, or what your family believes or your church believes. And if you believe something outside of that, it can't be true. But that's not God's way of revealing his truth. His way of revealing truth is personal. And it brings you into dependence on God alone. Remember, a fact is anything someone can get you to believe. We must let go of everything we think we know, and that which is truth will remain and grow. What is from God, which is what we want, will stand up to all scrutiny. We must learn to trust the Lord to lead us into all truth more than we trust the world, the flesh, and the devil to lead us into deception. So, thanks for tuning in. We'll pick it up here next week at the same time. Drop me a line at diane@therainersclub.org anytime or through Blog Talk Radio. It's always great to hear from you. I love having conversations with y'all. So thanks for tuning in. This has been Diane Thomas of Rainers Radio. Have a great night.